Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
For our first show of the new year, our guest is a man who calls himself Molded Truth on the message board. That is a plural name, and I assure our listeners there's only one guy sitting across from Richard and me. He's been an AP for 7 years, lives in Southern California, and he plays a variety of games. Molded Truth, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me.
Now, referring to yourself in the plural, Molded Truth, is interesting to say the least. How did that name come about?
It's actually just from writing lyrics and poetry. I've been a musician, and I was literally just anxious to get online. I was on BJ21 going on the message board, Stanford Wong's message board, and it asked for a username real quick, and first thing that popped into my head. So nothing really to do with Advantage Play.
Probably all the singular names were already taken.
That's so right. All the good ones were already taken.
All right. So MT, the acronym, sounds like you're not full of it. But so, I don't know what we're going to call it, but we're going to do this. All right. You started out
full
as
of wisdom.
I'm sorry, full of wisdom?
Wisdom and insight. That's why I'm here, right?
So. All right. Well, that's what we hope, and hopefully our listeners will agree come 40 minutes or so from now. You started out as a blackjack counter. Give us a 3-minute synopsis of the games you've played, where you've played them, and we'll come back to discuss some of them.
Well, I started out with counting 100%, but I try to be well-rounded when I go into a casino. Like, when I go into a casino, I want to be able to look around and just see where the best expected value is and go and play that game. So I'm not, like, loyal to a particular game. I'll do blackjack, video poker, done the carny games, you know, promotions, anything that I see that's going to make money and, you know, get hassled the least, I probably, you know, take that opportunity. A lot of times that winds up being counting cards. But so I've played all over the United States. I've played a lot of locations in South America, like Argentina, Colombia, Peru. And I've been a few places in Europe. I was just last summer in Romania.
How was Romania?
Transylvania was beautiful. I usually try to, one thing about this profession that I do like, I try to make it, I love to travel, so I try to make things a combination of work and exploration. So seeing Transylvania was absolutely magical, getting out there in the countryside and seeing the ancient sites, the sites of the ancient Dacians and the forests and, the magical enchanted forests and the old castles and things like that. And so most of the play was in Bucharest, though. Mm-hmm. So, and that's kind of has more of like a old Soviet kind of feel, you know, people still have that kind of, downer kind of attitude, and it's kind of run down, and, you know, it's interesting place, but, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a place I'd like to visit.
I much preferred Transylvania. You know, the casinos were, were different, you know, every place you go in the world, things are a little bit different, you know, but,
so. Very small.
They were small. They had great buffets out there for everyone. And there was something like a little bit weird, almost like a James Bond movie. Like, you'd start playing and these women, like these beautiful women, would just come and sit by you. And you're like, and they weren't hookers or anything like that. It was just like, it was just kind of weird. I'm like, can I help you? You know, and they're talking to you. It's like, you know, and it's like, what did I do? And then you realize that they work for the casino. So I guess they just hire these women to just go up and sit next to people. I don't know if they're just trying to distract them or keep them there or what, but it was...
I remember the first time that happened to me.
It was funny because one of them's like, can I have your number? And I'm like, no. You know, and it was just because I know nothing good was going to come out of it. If she works for the casino, you know.
So. Yeah, the first time it happened to me, I was kind of freaked out by it too, because I thought...
You've
hooker,
experienced that?
Right,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then... No, they were like hostesses hired by the casino,
right? Right.
To
do whatever.
And I said, look, you know, I'm not interested. Just, you know, I'd rather be alone. I don't want to talk to anybody. Go away.
Which is counterintuitive, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah. I've never been to Transylvania. I have been to some blood-sucking casinos, though.
Can I say that it's actually kind of an interesting story how I started out as a counter, if you want to hear real quickly. I worked as a journalist, basically. As a writer, I was doing arts stuff and editing out of Venice, California, that area, something, a weekly in that area. So it was, you know, it had its moments. And I was also very much into music, doing a band at the time. And we became managed by a pretty legendary figure in rock and roll, this manager named Bud Prager, who had managed like Mountain, Mississippi Queen, Foreigner, Typo Negative, Bad Company, Whitesnake, all through the generations. Like, he was a legend. And for some reason, he was into us and he wanted to get us signed for what was left of the dying music industry at the time. And we were all, you know, on par working with him. And then he died on us. He got esophageal cancer and he was gone in a couple months. And so I was there. This was around the financial crisis. And so I was sitting there, you know, I had quit my journalism job to, the point is I had quit my journalism job to go, you know, put my full efforts into the music thing. And then he died on us, you know, it was heartbreaking. You know, so there I am sitting at home, you know, and I start putting out a few resumes and stuff. I'm like, and it was at the heart of when no one was being hired. You know, the economy had collapsed and everything like that.
You're talking
and
I'm 2007, like, 2008.
No, this was
like
more like 2009 to 2009, okay. I would say. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I put out a few, and I'm like, I ain't going around begging for no job. You know what I mean? So I had heard of card counting, and I just I sat there for 6 months and studied the hell out of advantage play and card counting. I never came from money, so I didn't even really believe that it worked. I said, I got to prove to myself that it worked. And how I did that is I sorted through all the garbage. You know, you find some garbage books and, you know, in Barnes & Noble or something like that. And I found out who the real gurus were, like Stanford Wong and Arnold Schneider and Don Schlesinger. And so I studied a few primers. I learned how to do it. And then it was really Don Schlesinger's blackjack attack that proved to me that this is really, you know, this is mathematical, this is legitimate, and this really works. There's the computer simulations right there. And so I took off from there. The other insane thing I wanted to point, so people can laugh at me, and don't try this at home, but they were also doing like interest-free loans on credit cards at that time, and I had no money. You know, I had a few thousand bucks I saved from the job or whatever I had saved. So they were doing interest-free loans, so I took a $10,000, my card counting bankroll started as a $10,000 interest-free credit card loan. Oh,
what could possibly go wrong with that?
What could possibly go wrong, which is absolutely insane because, but I was able to, with that, and then I actually had a childhood friend who lent me a little money, you know, that she took profit from it too, and I built that up, you know, into six figures, and then, you know, never looked back. I just worked really hard and kind of, you know, grinded things out, which you can't really do nowadays because that was the last few years that you could grind out low stakes blackjack, because all the games since then have gone to garbage, to 6 to 5, you know, scam garbage. So
at least in Vegas, you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I would say there's still opportunities for card counting at high stakes for sure, you know, everywhere, you know, but all over that stuff has been, you know, infected the whole country, actually. You know? So there's still a lot of 3-2 games, I'm saying, but you just see that stuff everywhere now.
You know? I see, but you mean for the low-stakes player.
For the low-stakes, it's yeah. You have 8 decks, you have 8 decks, 6-5, really. It's like 500% worse odds than the game.
Cut in half.
It's funny because when they first brought it in, they used to advertise single deck, right? And they could get away with the 6-5 because they were saying, but it's single deck. And then in really short order, they went to 6-5 out of a CSM and 8 decks and no double after splits and double 10-11 only on some of these games.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly it just degenerated.
If you want to start counting cards nowadays and really get anywhere, I think you should have like a 50 to 100K bankroll to start. And what kind of kid is going to have that bankroll and be able to risk it and be like, yeah, I have no problem. You know, like hell.
Yoshi, who was on a couple of months ago.
If you have that, then you're rich anyway, and you don't need to be, you know, grinding, you know, so.
But. And you were always a solo player.
Well, solo player, but I've pretty much, like, I've done some sort of, I never was any part of any official team, but I've definitely shared information, shared promos with people, you know, back and forth. And you wind up, I played a, you know, like a 2-to-1 blackjack promotion once. It was like a card counter convention that people fly in from all over the country and stuff. And, you know, we share, but pretty much for me, yeah, I'm a lone wolf. And I noticed that, you know, doing things on my own, I get things done. I can trust myself. I don't have to worry, you know, about being stolen from or just disagreements. And, you know, I kind of like when I want to go, I go. And, you know, so it's easier for me to work alone, you know.
Yeah, and you know how drunk you are when you're playing with your money, which you don't always know with your partner.
Yeah.
Now, one time you didn't play by yourself. You were, and we've actually talked about you on the air. You were involved in a lawsuit in Arizona. Now, it's been told some on the air. And the plastic donkey actually became a question at the blackjack ball. But briefly summarize it, and then how were your experience different than what we've already spoken about?
Okay, yeah. I had two other guys. There might have been another guy there. But some other fellow Advantage players. A guy did me a favor and told me about this promotion. And it was basically a casino was giving just way too much cash back. We had the odds, you know, in our favor because of their, you know, cash back program. They were just giving way too much cash back, and we just sat there for months. They had a very good, you know, video blackjack game. We had, and so we just sat there for weeks or months or whatever it lasted, just banging the hell out of this thing. And I think we combined, you know, all of, you know, if you combine everything from all of us, we were up like something like $400,000 on this little dumpy casino out in Arizona. Called the Mazatzal or whatever in Payson. And so this just blew their minds. They'd never seen anything like it. They had no idea. They couldn't comprehend that anyone could actually win money out this stuff. That's the thing. Once you actually win money, you know, casinos are all like, come get lucky, come win money. But once you win money, you know, they're outraged, and you know, you see them turn into demons, you know. So anyway, they just, it's like a story from Dukes of Hazzard or something. These guys, they contacted the local redneck sheriffs, their buddies, and basically said, "These guys are winning money from us. Let's shake them down." And I was just one day. I was in there. I went to the bathroom, and these two rednecks in cowboy hats came in the bathroom and grabbed me and stuck me in handcuffs. They were in plain clothes. They didn't even say they were cops. I had no idea who these people were, and they dragged me in a back room. You know, they gave me a little bit of rough treatment. They didn't like beat me up or anything, but they kicked me in the leg. They aggressively frisked me all over. They grabbed my nuts. They went into my hair, you know, all this other stuff. And they, and then, you know, people from the casino started coming in, and other, quote unquote, so-called, you know, authority figures or whatever, like a tribal cop and state cops. And, they basically stole our, they basically kidnapped, assaulted, and robbed us, stole our money, and said we weren't getting it back. And kept us there for several hours.
How much of the money did you guys have on you?
You know, like gambling bankroll. So, you know, it was like it was kind of low. You didn't need much. It was kind of low stakes. Well, you know, it's all relative. But I think I had $6,000 or $7,000 in my pocket. They stole, and the other guys had a little more, a little less, something like that. You know, and so Bob Nersessian, the well-known gambling lawyer, took on the case, and one of the reasons they thought that they could get away with this absolutely outrageous behavior was because it was on a tribal reservation. So they didn't think that the Constitution applied. They didn't think that the law applied.
Even though these weren't tribal cops, right?
Right. These were regular police? Arizona Gila County Sheriff and Arizona State Police.
Plain clothes ones to boot.
Yeah.
They had their cowboy hats.
Yeah. They were styling out there. And so they... you know, they did this, so we wound up suing them, and it was a milestone case because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that we are able to sue people, employees of tribal casinos in their individual capacity, because you can't sue a Native American tribe because they have tribal sovereignty. But we proved that's not a blanket license to just violate basic human rights and constitutional rights and rob people and do other, you know, nefarious sorts of things. So we got that ruling in the Ninth Circuit. And the other hurdle that I'm proud of is you know, police have a thing, a legal doctrine called qualified immunity, which means they can basically do anything to you. They can rough you up, they can shoot you, they can, do whatever. And as long as they, a court believes that they thought they were doing the right thing within the law, they get away with it. Even if they were breaking the law, they get away with it if a jury believes that they thought, or a judge or jury believes that they thought that they were doing the right thing. And the only way to actually sue a cop and get past qualified immunity is for a reasonable, for their behavior to be so outrageous that a reasonable person, you know, couldn't possibly believe that they thought they were doing the right thing. And we met that standard, and we got summary judgment against the Gila County sheriffs. So
by we mean Bob and Thea.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Now, a couple other lawsuits you've been in. One that's most interesting to me is one in South America, because we don't hear a whole lot about South American lawsuits on this
program.
Actually,
before we get, I want to get to that, but okay. You mentioned that one of the places you played was Colombia.
Yeah.
And when I used to travel a lot, people used to say to me that they thought what I was doing was dangerous. You know, some of the countries that you go to, people think are dangerous. And one of the countries that has that reputation is Colombia.
Yeah.
And so did you think it was dangerous? Were you ever in fear in Colombia? Or, I mean, if you're going there just as a tourist, probably it's not very, there's not much to be afraid of. But you're carrying bankroll money.
Yeah.
So did you have any fears about that, and how was it? And
well, carrying bankroll, I'm just doing this as a profession. As you know, we're used to things that other people are not, you know, wouldn't even dream of, or it'd make their jaw drop, you know. So, but the Colombia itself, yeah, has a dangerous reputation. That reputation is mostly from decades ago. I mean, up until a couple months ago, they had guerrillas, the FARC, fighting, revolutionary forces fighting in the jungle. I mean, it's a crazy, it can be a crazy place, but it seems much safer nowadays. I'm not saying it's safe, and there's definitely certain areas if you went, or if you, you know, were messing with the wrong people or going to the wrong place, you would have some problems. And I'm not encouraging people to go there or anything like this. Just for me, a goal of mine is to travel and to see the world and to see different cultures. And so for me, first of all, I just don't care. Like I would go, I've been to many dangerous places, dangerous. It's all we go by statistics, right? So danger is like, okay, there might be a 0.1% of something happening in this American city, and maybe there's a 0.6% chance down there. You know what I mean? It's all relative. So you're still not likely, unless you fly into Iraq or Afghanistan or, you know, something absolutely out of your mind like that.
North Korea, you know, might be fun.
North Korea. Yeah. You're going to fly into North Korea, you know, I really don't care. When someone's like, oh, somewhere is dangerous, you know, well, I'd rather kind of live life and have some life experiences than worry too much about things like that. But anyway, you have to be smart about things. You have to do your best to be safe. And Colombia, you know, it's just, you know, Colombia and Peru, they have amazing, you know, native histories. You know, when I was in Colombia, I went on a 30-mile trek into the jungle to an ancient lost city that was lost for 500 years. It was abandoned 500 years ago. It's called La Ciudad Perdida, Tayuna. And, you know, where the natives buried gold artifacts with their, you know, and basically it was a 30-mile hike over 4 days. And you go in and you see these, you meet indigenous tribes that haven't had much human contact except, you know, a few people hiking in for years and years and years. And there's just so much adventure down there, and so much to discover and so much to see, and so many things that just blew my mind down there. And
yeah, that sounds really cool.
I've been back to Colombia 3 times. I've been to Peru once. I want to go back. And it's you know, we should not, for people who neglect the region south of us, I feel sorry for them, you know. So
what happened?
So there's a Colombian lawsuit.
So yeah. So I had 2 lawsuits in the U.S. One that happened in Reno. We can get into that if you guys want, or if we have time. But
I always like, especially if you want. I like talking about those cases.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I never expected this to be. You know, I figured maybe something would happen one time, but here I am on 3, in 7 years. So I'm kind of above the curve, I guess, with, you know. But so I heard about this. A friend of mine, another Advantage player, told me about a Joker promotion down in Colombia. And he unfortunately didn't get to play it for that much because he was already, you know, hitting some other place down there, and he was kind of notorious by the time he showed up at this place. So he got maybe an hour or two at this thing. And it was like, from what he described, it was an $800 an hour promotion, blackjack promotion with Jokers. And so he did me a great favor and told me about it. Like I said, I had been down there. I loved going down to South America. So I, as soon as I heard it, within 3-4 days, I heard about this. I was on a plane down there. And so I show up at this place, and it turns out it's not an $800 an hour promotion. They had doubled the table maximum, so it's now a $1,600 an hour promotion. And I'm like, okay, so what have we here? So I just go in. I'm like, okay, I you know, had some food, got ready to go. I went in and I played for maybe 16 hours straight, something like that. 14 hours straight it was. And I clobbered the living hell out of this thing. I was just flat betting. There was no card counting. You know, you can just flat bet certain things like this when you have a strong edge like that. And it really wasn't much effort at all. And I, by the end of the day, I had clobbered them for about 90 million pesos, which is about
$7. What is that?
$7.25. No, it's about $30,000 US. And I basically cleared out the entire casino cage. You know how like some blackjack players, they talk about, oh, I cleared the rack of chips. No, I cleared the entire cashier's cage of pesos. I had like these cargo pants, you know, filled with pesos and stuff. And actually, they didn't even have all the money, and it was like late at night. And so they gave me all of it, and I kept a portion of that in chips. And I went and I came back the next day. I basically said, because I said, I'm going to hit it hard at first. I'm either going to be, I had a 10-day trip booked. I'm like, I'm going to either going to be playing this all week long and, you know, or whatever, or I'm going to, you know, be in there and get a few hours and they're going to throw me right out, you know, especially because and then I'll go have a good vacation. Right. And so that, you know, since they had thrown my friend out, I didn't know what to expect, but I said, hey, at that kind of money per hour, you play a couple hours, you have your EV, you have your trip covered, you have your plane covered, everything. So, I come back the next day and I play for about 6 hours. And that, the next day, in that 6 hours, I broke even. So I basically had I played with the chips that I had kept, you know, because they didn't have the cash. They're like, oh, we'll have more cash tomorrow, you know. So I came back and played with those chips. I about broke even after 6 hours, with those chips. And I said, hey, you know, I've been playing for 20 hours here. I have done nothing but play. I'm going to go out and grab a bite to eat and just see the sights a little and then come back and play more, you know. So I went to the cage to cash those chips, and they're just like, I hand it to the cashier, and she hands me some slip back with the number written on it. I'm like, no, I want to cash him out. And she's like, oh, hold on. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm surrounded by this Colombian casino owner and some enormous, like, Colombian goon, you know, like, casino guards. And they basically, they're like, oh, can we talk to you? And, like, I walk over a couple steps to talk to him, and before I know it, I'm, like, forced into this back room. And at that point, I was, you know, I stood my ground with the guy. I'm like, you know, I won this fair and square. This is what you offered. What's your problem? The problem was my Spanish was worse than it is now, which is not very good. And he was basically, he didn't have much English. So, but we were kind of communicating, but it was a bit awkward. So I'm in this office. They had shut the door behind me and the goon was blocking the door. So, basically, he's there like, oh, and he goes, you're famous. Like, I guess they somehow snooped to find my name, who I was. And they're like, you're famous. We know about you. They were acting like I was Houdini or like a magician or some, you know, magical guy. I'm like, so tell me what
you're
did
not?
I, right. But, so anyway, he couldn't get, you know, they tried to take the money back. He's like, I want all the money back that you won. They couldn't get that, but they stole the chips and some money from me. So it was basically like, if you give us this back, we'll let you go. And if you don't, you don't know, you know, things could happen to you kind of thing. You know, it's a very, Colombia is a very dangerous country, you know, as you're talking this and that. And so after that happened, I just said, I normally, if it was anywhere else outside of, you know, Colombia, which I knew nothing about the legal system, whether they had one or how corrupt it was or not. Didn't know. So I sat there, I'm like, well, you know, people know I'm here, but, you know, nobody really knows I'm exactly here and, you know, what could happen. And I'm like, you know what, it's just money. So I let him, you know, I let him steal a portion of it back from me. And
so how much did he take?
They took about 10 to 12,000.
So you're still up like 20,000.
Well over 20,000.
Yeah. Okay.
About 20,000. Right. Yeah. I get out of there and I'm just kind of like stewing on it, you know, and then I looked at the, U.S. Embassy website and they had some lawyers referred there. And for me, I just don't, you know, I think that gambling is basically a legalized scam anyway. And so if someone, you know, I just don't let them, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, it's Colombia. There's nothing you can do. Just kiss it goodbye. You know, whatever. You don't want to mess around down there. And I agree. I wouldn't want to be on the other end of a lawsuit or a prosecution. But I'm like, you know what? Let me check into this with these lawyers. You know, they're on the embassy website. They probably, you know, they might have an okay reputation and all this. And so I found some, and they were willing to take the case, you know, on contingency. I did pay them a small fee. But the case is on contingency now. This basically happened in May, I think May or June of this year. So this is something that's ongoing.
May or June of this year hasn't happened yet.
Oh, you're right. Thanks, Bob. May or June of 2017. Yeah. So these things take a while. They seem to be working on it. You know, some people are like, oh, they're just going to do nothing. And well, it's like, you know, they did get a little bit of a retainer from me, but if they do nothing, then they're not going to get paid. So, you know, it's in their interest. And what I learned about the Colombian system, supposedly, according to these lawyers, is that they basically file a prosecution against these guys, and it's a criminal thing, not civil. Like in my cases in the United States, it's all civil. So these people steal from you, they violate your rights, you know, they do this, they do that, the other thing. Those are criminal actions, but in the U.S., they're never prosecuted. They're just sued, and they just have to pay money. So really, nothing happens to them. Like when we sued the cops, their insurance just pays the money, and they go on doing, you know, being as corrupt as they were before. So, but down there in Colombia, it's a criminal thing. So basically, these lawyers filed a criminal motion, and then the state prosecutor takes it. And basically, and then the difference down there is if you have a criminal charge filed against you, you either go to jail in this hellhole of a dungeon in Colombia, which I couldn't imagine, or you can pay to not go to jail. So I figured, our odds are pretty good. I think, you know, it hasn't come to completion yet, but I think that this guy would probably rather pay back the 10 grand then go rot in a Colombian dungeon somewhere. So I think I like my chances. I don't know, you know, maybe it'll turn out, you know, to nothing or whatever, but you know, we're doing what we can about
seems
it.
Seems like a free shot, right? I mean,
yeah, free shot.
Well, but it also seems like a piddly shot. It's like we're talking suing them over 10,000, of which he's going to keep 5 maybe. It's like unless there's punitive damages to go along with it, it doesn't really seem like it's worth a whole lot.
Well, there are other damages, and they have to pay for the costs. So the lawyers, you know, and they're, I think the contingency is 30%. So they're suing them for 10 plus cost damages, whatever. And then, you know, so it's, you know, as far as I understand it, I'm supposed to be made whole, and they're supposed to have, you know, to bear.
Okay,
the
so you
the
get 10,000.
Well, but as opposed to, it's not like he has to dig a ditch for it, right?
Yeah.
He's put the lawyer to work, and
yeah,
either the lawyer gets it or he doesn't. It doesn't you know, it's no skin off his back.
Okay, will you have to go down there to testify? Who knows?
They said I might have to go. They said I would probably have to come back one more time, which I'm more than happy to do. Great, an excuse.
You like going to Columbia anyway?
Yeah,
and hey, we're only in it for the story.
I didn't get to see. I didn't get to see some stuff. You know, there were still some things I didn't have time to see. I wanted to go see these ancient underground tombs they had down there, and other sorts of things. So there's still a bit to be. There's still a bit of adventure down there, I think.
Yeah.
So. Doesn't sound all bad. All right. So there's a Reno lawsuit we're going to talk about. There's a cruise ship, and there's some Bitcoin stuff. But before we do that, we just happen to have some commercials. Go figure. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. to 2:59 a.m., is the $500,000 spin-to-win promotion. Earn 500 slot points or 2,000 video poker points, and you spin a virtual wheel right on your machine. Prizes are all points from $2,500 to $10,000, which means $7.50 up to $300, or free play from $5 to $100. You may earn up to 4 spins per day. On Martin Luther King Day, there'll be a $32,000 hot seat promotion from 8 a.m. to midnight, where approximately every 3 minutes, one player randomly receives $100. This will be in addition to the regular spin-to-win promotion on the same day. The first free video poker class this semester is on Tuesday, January 9th, beginning at noon in the Silverado Lounge. Jacks are better. This is a good introduction to video poker pay schedules and strategies for those who haven't looked into video poker much. It also provides a good background for the classes later in the semester, because most games without wild cards have a strategy that is at least moderately similar to that of Jacks or Better. The classes are free, and if you're at least 21 years of age, you're invited. The Silverado Lounge is the first one you come to once you reach the casino from the parking garage elevators. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Double Super Times Pay. This is a 7 coins per line game where you can receive 2x through 10x multipliers before the deal and or after the deal, before the draw. The game returns approximately 0.5% more than the base game with no change in strategy. It doesn't feel like it pays 0.5% more, though. Under certain conditions, which have to include a dealt royal flush, receiving a multiplier on the deal, and receiving any multiplier on the draw, all of which are long shots, the multipliers each become 10x so that you get a dealt royal with a 20x multiplier. On a $1.10 play game, that long shot pays $800,000. The fact that it pays so much, albeit very rarely, adds quite a bit to the EV that the vast majority of players never see. All right, we're talking to Mold Truth. He told us about 2 lawsuits he's been in, and he's about to share with us something that happened in Reno.
Good old Reno. Reno, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, probably a lot of people down here, it's kind of in like an old cowboy town. I think it's older than Vegas for gambling, right? It had gambling before Vegas, or back to the 1800s or something. Anyway, it's an old West town. So we were up there. I was up there, again, playing. There was a place, there, the now defunct, Siena Casino. I almost like to hope that we had something to do with that, the Advantage players, that they had a promotion that they were giving. It was kind of a rebate thing, and they were just giving way too much money back for their own good. And I had heard about this, and there's also a lot of other Advantage players that had heard about this. So they went from they were trying to get new players in, but they just wound up getting a lot of high action, you know, Advantage player, kind of quote-unquote whale type players, not the kind of players that you would want to rejuvenate your business. So anyway, I had heard about it. It was a couple years ago, And I had been on a pretty bad downswing. I think I was on like a $90,000 losing streak or something like that. And it was just to the point where it was like, you know, this sucks, you know, because in this, you know, it's hard to take the swings sometimes, especially when it gets to that kind of a level. And so I hear about this, and it's a great play. It's great EV, but it basically requires betting about, you know, to really maximize it, it requires betting about $3,000 a hand on craps. So...
that's before the odds, or that's included in the odds bet?
No, you just, you can work with that, but basically if you just want to keep it simple, you know, you're going to get the EV, you just bet, you know, if you can bet 3,000 on the pass, don't pass, you know, there's a variety of configurations you could calculate, and there are probably better configurations maybe than I had done, but basically the EV is there if you, you know, if you just bet pass or don't pass. So, then
you
heard
to take a big swing.
Yeah, you just want to take a big swing. You want a big upswing or a big downswing. You want a big upswing, then you take your money and leave, or you get a big downswing and then you take your rebate and then play again. And it was something that was going on for several months, or anyway, so you got more than one shot at it, which was great, because the more trials, the more closer you should be.
A daily rebate? Or no, a short period?
A monthly rebate. A monthly.
Okay.
And so... without even going into too many specifics of, you know, all that stuff. But anyway, so we're playing it. Then I hear that there's these guys going there and betting both sides, you know, because just hedging, you know, doing pass and don't pass. And you think that's ridiculous. They would never stand for that. But then I had heard the casino was just tolerating it. I mean, there was just people doing this, and they were collecting their rebate checks every month and splitting it, and, you know. And so I was just like, I'm on this, you know, stressful downswing. I had a friend of mine who wanted to do it. I'm like, if everyone else is doing it, why don't we do it? You know, so we just go and we bet, we do 3,000 on pass and 3,000 on don't pass. And so, you know, you're not really going to lose much doing that. And then one of you is going to collect. We do that, and I figured, especially, I'd hope that there were going to be several players there, because if there's several players on the table, then they can't even tell that you're doing it, because if there's a bunch of people with big action, then how would they even tell that two of them are, you know, are correlated?
Yeah, but seven of them are betting 3,000 on the do's, and six are betting 3,000 on the don'ts. It doesn't matter who's with whom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And anyway, by the way, I want to point out, because... you just can't leave, you know, obvious things out, that there's nothing wrong with betting the pass and don't pass. If you want to sit there and go to a casino right now and bet the pass line and have somebody else bet the don't pass, you're more than entitled to. It's perfectly within the rules. It's not anything, you know, if that's what you want to do. It's pretty boring, you know, because, you know, the house still has the edge, okay? But they basically acted like, oh, you're doing something illegal or something. You know, people assume that. You're not, you know. And so, but anyway, they decided they didn't like it. They came to us and, like, basically just, like, they didn't say much. They're just, like, guards came up and they're like, you guys are done. You know, take your money and cash out. So... I took my money, I cashed out, and I went and got my stuff out of my room and left, because it was just a bad scene, and I had a room across town. I mean, I wound up with a lot of comps and a lot of times. They never said anything about us being trespassed or anything like that. Basically, I don't know how much we have to explain to people, but we get kicked off of games all the time. It doesn't mean you can't come back to the casino, unless they specifically say, you're trespassed, don't come back or you'll be arrested. They have to tell you, you know. And so I'm just used to being kicked off games. So it's, not, you know, and I go back to places and you're perfectly welcome to come back unless they tell you specifically you're not. So they never said we were trespassed. We left, you know, got our stuff and left, cashed out. Then a couple months later, I start getting stuff in the mail. Come get a free suite and $600 of free play, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Some sushi, you know, whatever else. So I come into town. I had a few pickups to do at that place and free play from other places. And I actually called in advance. I said, you know, I'm just going to call and get a confirmation and stuff. And, you know, if they say something like, we don't want you here or something, you know, just to kind of make sure. Like, I know for a fact I was never trespassed, but, you know, sometimes, you know, Peter doesn't tell Paul this, sometimes they're just clueless. So I called up just to feel it out. I said, I want to book a room, you know, and I said my name. And they took my credit card, gave me a confirmation number, and said, come on in. Yeah, you're all good to go. So I show up, and then I start walking to the front desk and try to check in. And these two casino goons, like security guards, come up on me, and I could tell from the look in their eye that they're up to no good. You know, so they come to me, and they're like, are you such and such? You know, are you Molded Truths? And I could just tell that, you know, it was a bad scene. They were like surrounding me, and just from the look in their eye, I said, it's none of your business. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, look, I'm leaving. And then I started walking towards the door, and they lunged at me, like physically. They grabbed me, and they started like wrestling with me. I mean, it went on for a little while. And they're like, finally, like, they got me, they put me in handcuffs after a struggle. I started screaming. I'm like, help, call the police. You know, I'm being kidnapped, blah, blah, blah. And so they're like dragging me through the casino. And still, I'm like screaming, help, you know, somebody call the police, you know, I'm being kidnapped. And like, I knock into the craps table, you know, people look over, like, ooh, they start giggling, or they don't know what to think. I just wanted to cause a scene for their customers. Well, because it was outrageous what they were doing, you know, what they thought they could do to me for no reason. So I was forced into this back room, you know, or just for playing intelligently, basically. So I was forced into this back room, and they like basically put me in this restraint, like some kind of
a straitjacket.
Yeah, like it was like a safety belt thing, like with a crisscross or something on it. And
that's bizarre.
And
that's the first one of those.
I'm like screaming. I'm like, you know, let me the fuck out of here. You know, like, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. You know, you guys are criminals. You know, you're gonna pay for this, you know, all this. And
oh, that's a good way to let him reach all the time. You guys are criminals. Yeah,
and the guy actually said that I was a cheater, which I'm not, you know, and that's not, it had nothing to do, you know. So basically, they invited me here. It said my name was printed on the thing. You know, it was an exclusive invitation with my name printed out on it. Come in, come get your room, get $600. And when I show up, they, you know, I even warned them in advance I was coming in. I booked the room. And if it was a mistake, like if they didn't want me there, they could have just called me right back and be like, hey, you know, this was a mistake. We don't want you to come in. Don't bother to come in. Or when I came through the door, they could have said that, you know, after inviting me there and confirming it. But instead, they purposely said, let him come in, and we're going to do this to him, and we're going to try to get him arrested. So they put me in this room, and finally, you know, after the whole struggle and ordeal, the cops show up, and once I get to explain to the cops, I said, look, I was invited here. Look at the invite there with my name on it and the confirmation number, and they took my credit card for a deposit and all that. And the cops just, like, look at them like, you idiots. Like, what are you doing? You know, you have no right to do anything. You guys invited this guy here.
I know those cops work in Las Vegas.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thankfully, I wasn't dealing, you know, with the Keystone, you know, cowboys like I was in Arizona. These were the cops acted fairly rationally. The only problem I had with what they did, you know, so they let me go, and, you know, and we took it from there. But the only problem I had with what they did is that I wanted the guards who assaulted me arrested. I wanted to make a citizen's arrest. I'll sign for it. And in the state of Nevada, you have a right to do that according to the code. And it's actually a crime for the cop not to you know, take your citizen's arrest. If you're, you know, and you're responsible if it's a false arrest, but you have, you know, it's codified in Nevada that you have a right to do that. The cop just still refused to arrest. They're like, we're not going to arrest him. You know, it was a mistake. I'm like, it's not a mistake. They knew I was coming in, you know, and this was something that was orchestrated, you know. And so, as I explained earlier, they always get off the hook criminally. They're never charged criminally because I talked to the Reno PD after. I said, I want them charged, you know. I want them charged, you know. They assaulted me. They knew I was coming in. They did this on purpose. So, and finally, one of the superintendents, probably just to cover their own asses, they're like, we're going to refer this to the prosecutor. But then nothing ever happened. But then, of course, I called Bob. I'd already dealt with Bob from Arizona when they're Sessian. And And so we filed a lawsuit against the Sienna. We actually did prevail in the lawsuit. However, Bob warned me that Reno, like, you're just really not going to get much justice in Reno, and they just don't, you know, it's a cowboy town. They just don't see it as a big deal. And in Arizona, we sued in federal court, so the federal judge had more of an understanding of basic constitutional rights than maybe a Reno judge does, I guess. I don't know. But basically, the judge sent it to an arbitration. We did prevail in arbitration, but it was basically looked at like, what's the big deal? You know, they did this to you, you know, so we didn't really get much. You know, we did win, and we did get a judgment against them, but it wasn't really, it was pretty disappointing number, you know. So
did it include the $600 that they promised?
I guess.
Did it include a non-disclosure?
No.
Okay, because a lot of times, you know, they make that part of the settlement. Oh, this wasn't a settlement. This was actually an arbitration. So
yeah, it definitely it was disappointing because it definitely felt like it was kind of like that. Oh, we protect our own up here in Reno, you know, and you come up here and try your shenanigans, you know.
The way it used to be in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a bit disappointing. Bob did warn me that was a likely outcome, you know, but, you know, so.
Well, I'm just glad that you're doing this because, you know, for years prior to James Grosjean, there weren't lawyers who would take these cases. And B, I can't tell you the number of times that I talked to players and they said, well, I don't want to sue because then it'll get my name out there and I won't be able to play anymore.
Yeah.
Which is nonsense. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You still can. I mean, I've taken some hits, you know, as far as that. And the thing is, they try to pin it on you. Like in this case, their attorney tried to say, like, you want to do this. You like having lawsuits. And you just, oh, you see, you already used Bob Nersessian for another one. I don't like this, but, you know, I'm not going to have my, you know, basic human rights, my basic dignities, you know, compromised by these, you know, greedy thugs, you know, who are, so somebody won against you. So this is what you do. You know, they're like, it's like mafia stuff. And I'm not going to, it's unacceptable to me. And so I'm not out to sue anyone, but if someone violates my rights, if someone does me like that, you know, I will, of course, to me, it's a no-brainer, you know?
Yeah.
So I just took the calculated risk. I'll still be able to play. I still do play. I mean, there's a million of these casinos that have proliferated everywhere. Like, you're never not going to have a game, really, it seems. And even as bad as things get, conditions-wise or otherwise, it's just there's always something out there, it seems.
You know? So how much do you play? Are you on the road constantly traveling? I don't mean to foreign countries. I mean in the U.S.
Well, I play, I would consider it full-time, but I've I would say less in the last year or two, and especially less now that I've gotten into the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency thing. Which I know you guys wanted to talk about that.
I do.
A lead into that. But so I spend a lot of time learning about and working with that stuff. And then I still do spend a considerable amount of time doing advantage play, mostly regionally. I still love to travel. I'm a little bit burned out on traveling to, like, you know, bumfuck Egypt, Iowa, you know, and places like that and sitting there for 2 weeks and stuff. I'm a little bit over that, but I still, you know,
there's a lot of places to play in California and close to Nevada.
Exactly.
But have you played do you play the card rooms in California at all?
I did. Yeah. There was a couple things I did in the card rooms. I just don't want to kind of disclose techniques and stuff. It's just, I just don't think it's helpful really to, you know, if people want to know this stuff, they'll find it on their own. And, you know, but anyway, I found a couple plays in the card rooms that have since burned out, like kind of dried up for the most part. There were banking up. What I will talk about, there were one of the opportunities. There were banking opportunities because in California card rooms, you get the opportunity to bank the game. It's kind of a weird California law or loophole. Why? Because casinos are illegal in California, so this is kind of like It's an exception for card rooms that allow players to bank. I mean, it's nonsense.
It's class two gaming.
Yeah, we can get into
class two. The casino can't take the action, so the players have to take the action.
But they have figured out a way to do where it's basically the same. They basically, they'll let you bank, but then they charge you, and it's gotten closer and closer. They'll charge you as much as the house edge, so there is no incentive anymore to bank. Like, basically, they charge a collection on hands in California. So if everyone's being charged a buck, you know, then obviously if you're banking like a carny game or something, you can make money off of that. But they've since, most of the places have like tailored it where, okay, it's $1 to play the hand, but then it's like $7 to bank the hand. Or like they even have by scale. Like if you try to bank Baccarat, which is like a 1 to 1.5% edge for, you know, that the player would lose, and you try to bank that, they have it like, okay, $700 of action, you have to pay $8 to bank or $10, you know, so they've really, you know, fine-tuned it so you can't, you know, it's difficult for you to make money on that now.
Yeah, well, that's because they're illegally banking
the games
themselves.
They're illegally cross-banking where the bankers are in cahoots with them. They're not supposed to be able to bank their own games or be able to profit from that, but they do. They just bank the neighbor casino's games, and the other casino banks their games, and the state refuses to do anything about it because I have contacted the state, California State Gaming, which is a complete joke. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Let's talk about Bitcoin. We're taping this show on January 1st. Earlier today, it was the low 13,000 for a Bitcoin. Right now, it's high 13,000s. 3 weeks ago, it was almost 20,000. That's that volatility wouldn't be for everybody. are you still bullish on Bitcoin, and why?
Oh, I love when it goes down. Because how are you going to make money if it doesn't go down? Because for me, I buy low and I sell high. I know that most people buy high and then panic and sell low, but that's just me. I buy low and I sell high.
So did you sell when it was up at 19,000, 20,000?
Well, with me, I have some where I have an investment where I'm going down with the ship because I believe in it. I believe in it from both a philosophical standpoint and a moral standpoint, and, you know, and that it's a good investment. But, you know, people are like, Bitcoin is, oh my God, it's, what do you think? Bitcoin's $13,000. Like, that's your argument that Bitcoin's only $13,000? Like, it's only gone up 1,650% this year, Bob? You know, it's like, that's not gone up.
Geez, this is the first of the year. It is.
Well, if you take a year's time, you know, but... So anyway, I am bullish on Bitcoin. I just, some of the arguments I'm hearing kind of blow my mind, especially from AP Advantage players. I mean, we take risk for a living, okay? Like, we are tailor-made for this. And what you have, you can't just say, I mean, there's people that said, oh my God, Bitcoin is $500, so it's too much. It could never go up from there. Then the next guy's like, oh my God, it's $2,000. It could... There's no way it could go up from there. And then now it's 5,000 and this and that. But that's not a mathematical way of looking at something. And I'm surprised sometimes when I hear Advantage players, you have to look at it from the standpoint of market capitalization, of potential market capitalization. This is not a company. Okay. This is not a company, and this is not an oversold, stock. You know, this is a worldwide currency. A worldwide store of value that every single man, woman, and child on the planet has an interest in owning and using. So when you look at that and you start to examine the potential market capitalizations of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, then you see that basically, let's compare it to gold, because a lot of people say Bitcoin is digital gold. It's a store of value. You know, people in countries whose currency is plummeting, like Venezuela, you know, Turkey, Zimbabwe, Argentina, they put their money, smart people put their money in Bitcoin, and their money doesn't, you know, holds value, actually goes up in value. But basically, so if you look at the numbers, if Bitcoin were worth, had the market share of gold in the world, and Bitcoin is much more efficient than gold, you know, you don't have to worry about transporting it in a truck and being robbed or have it taken by the government or anything like that. If Bitcoin were worth, had the market share of gold in the world, then each Bitcoin would be worth around $500,000. or close to that. And so, and if each Bitcoin, let's go further. If Bitcoin had the same market capitalization approximately of the US dollar, then you would be up over $1 million per Bitcoin. And that is, you know, that's pretty far-fetched. You say, oh, the US dollar, that's outrageous. It could never reach that. But Bitcoin is worldwide. Again, it's worldwide. The United States dollar, that's from one country, albeit, you know, the richest country and an enormous country, you know, but that's one country. The Bitcoin potential market is the entire world. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Bitcoin, you know, could get to $500,000 to $1 million per coin. Now, you say, okay, that's pretty looney tune, right? So let's say, could Bitcoin get to 10% of what gold is in the world? You seriously think it can't? Because if it was, then each Bitcoin would be about $50,000. So you see, you have to have some sort of basis. You can't just say, oh, it's $13,000. That's outrageous, you know? It's so you have to look at something, you know, and put it to scale, you know? So, and it basically, you know, it's a disruptive technology. It's basically the internet of money. It's like the internet. One person, if you really want to understand philosophically what Bitcoin is about, I recommend listening to Andreas Antonopoulos, who's like a computer engineer.
Tried to get him for the show.
Oh,
and couldn't get him. And he never answered my email, so.
Oh, okay. So the one big point that he brings up, he says, and we can see this, like, as people who use paper money, you know, for what we do and are, you know, and deal with cash, we see that cash is kind of going by the wayside. Not only is it problematic with, you know, seizures, you know, being seized or it can be dangerous, but things are, you know, there's going to be one of two choices in the future, basically. Cash is sort of going by the wayside. You see a lot of cashless tolls. You can't use cash on airplanes anymore. I was at a cashless bar the other day.
5 years, 10 years.
Yeah, because everything, I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense because everything else is digital now. So, yeah. You know, music, there's no record, you know, all this. And so there's going to be two choices in the future. You're going to have, and this is what I mean by philosophical, you're either going to have every single transaction you do is going to be done with a bank card. Basically, you're going to have to get permission from a corporate bank, a third party, to use your money, who charges you fees or does whatever other controls they want to do on you. And that is also surveilled every single transaction, from a 50 cent gum purchase to whatever, to the largest purchase you do, will be surveilled by these corporate banks and the government. So that's the one choice. And then the other reality is you have a decentralized and open cryptocurrency, a digital money, where it's basically like digital cash. You still have privacy. You make transactions.
I think you're naive if you think the governments are not going to be surveilling the bit. I mean, the U.S. government's already trying. And, you know, they just announced that I think it's the UK is coming out with their own cryptocurrency.
Okay.
So there's no doubt in my mind that blockchain is the future of money. It will all be digital.
Yeah.
The question is, will it be Bitcoin?
But
maybe.
But
I think where we will be going is we will be going to government digital money.
Okay.
And you know, it would not surprise me for the governments to make Bitcoin illegal.
I don't believe so. Here's the thing, because that's the whole point. That is the whole magic and glory of decentralization. Okay, because you cannot, if a government bans Bitcoin, that's fine. People just still use it. I mean, you'd have to shut down the internet, okay, to do it and keep the internet offline.
Think about internet gambling, right? The way that they shut it down was by stopping the banks from processing the payments, right? Okay. So if the U.S. government says, here's our U.S. government cryptocurrency, and any store that uses Bitcoin is going to be breaking the law and will be prosecuted, right? You have to use U.S. dollar Bitcoins, you know.
Well, the whole thing about what cryptocurrency, the more it's universally adopted, and we're still in very early stages of adoption, is that you don't need to go ask a bank. You don't need the bank. It's peer to peer.
Well, but you know, you have to be able to use your money to buy things.
Right. Well,
this is one of the big problems with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You can't go in a store and pay with Bitcoin.
You
can't go to Starbucks and buy your coffee with Bitcoin.
Well, right now you can't, but who would want to? Why would I Why would anyone in their right mind spend something? Like, let's say I made a purchase for $100. That's basically, probability-wise, like me paying $1,000 for that, because your Bitcoin is likely, as I explained, if you look at to the market capitalizations, the wider it's adopted, that Bitcoin is likely to keep on climbing quite substantially. So, and there are privacy coins. I mean, it's going to get to the point, you know, where it's like, you say the government's going to do this, the government's going to do that. That's like the government going, they would have to put a cop in every bedroom to see what you're doing on the internet. And like, you know, every,
wait a minute.
As far as the United States government.
If the government goes to Walmart and says, you are not going to accept Bitcoin, and if you do, we're going to come after you and prosecute you. You think Walmart's going to take your Bitcoin?
Well, check this out. First of all, I don't think that the United States government is going to do it. I could be wrong. But, it's still a store of value. Does Walmart take your gold? If you brought a bar of gold bullion and tried to buy a candy bar with it, if I was the clerk, I would take the money. But you try to do that with a clerk at Walmart and they'll look at you like you're crazy. They won't take your bar of gold bullion. So there are things that are a store of value. I say to people at this point, I think it will be currency. There's things they have to work out, you know, scaling issues and things like that. But it's basically, what I tell people to look at it like, you know, and they love this, is basically act like a new form of precious metal was dropped down from the heavens. You know what I mean? And that's more efficient than what's there, and that's better. And that's it. Because what is money? Again, what is money really? It's a piece of paper. What is gold really? It's a shiny brick of shit that someone dug out of the earth. You know, so nothing has, you know, the intrinsic right. value is the network effect, and it's worldwide. So when something's a worldwide network effect, just like the internet, a government is going to have quite a difficult time shutting it down. It's already been shut down in Zimbabwe. People use it all over the place there because their money is worthless. I mean, so people can try to ban it. You know, China has tried to restrict it. And what people say about China, the obvious thing about China is everything they ban turns out to be a wonderful, you know, investment, like Google and Facebook and everything else. You know, so it's just, look, the Pandora's box is open.
To go back to the gold analogy.
The Pandora's box is open, and it's not, and if anybody thinks it's going to be put back in the box, you're dreaming.
I'm not arguing the point that cryptocurrency is the future. No question in my mind.
Yeah, the government, as far as the government currency, is part of like the appeal of cryptocurrency is that it's in limited supply. That's very important. And it cannot be manipulated by a central bank. And so you say the government's going to have their own coin. Well, that can still be manipulated by, you know, inflation. You know, they can print more.
Sure.
So that's the whole point, the whole glory of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is it can't be manipulated by a central bank. And
but
so
to
that's,
the guy on you know, the street, all he wants is to be able to pay for his gasoline. Yeah. You know what I mean? He doesn't care about all that.
Right,
he just wants to be able to go with his phone or whatever and boom, buy his gas.
Yeah.
And, and if the easiest, most convenient one is the UK crypto coin that, you know, is sponsored by the government, so they're going to tell you whether this is true or not. They're going to say, this is safer than Bitcoin because our government is behind it.
Right. Well, the crypto...
That's what they're going to...
The crypto still have
okay,
a job.
Okay, before we go on with this, this has the potential to go on for days.
Yeah, I realize. We got to wrap this up.
And so we're going to have more shows on Bitcoin, for sure. It's it's an interesting topic. Mold of Truth, we thank you for coming on. We may have you on the next Bitcoin show.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Wait, before we go, are you doing any online gambling using Bitcoin?
No, I almost got into it that way back in 2014, and I'd be
I'm really interested in that subject because I think there may be some real potential there for a lot of our listeners.
Right, getting around the
yes,
you know, exactly. They can't ban it. You know, I mean, that's all the
thing. So thank you, Mold of Truth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
Good day.